Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIES podcast. This one is from the GAS programme, and my name is James Henderson, and I'm Head of GAS Research at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. We're here on the 2nd of February 2023 at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon UK time, and we're going to discuss our latest GAS quarterly, which have the title Outlook for Gas Markets in 2023, Key Signposts to Look Out For. And I'm here with the three authors of the GAS quarterly, Mike Fullwood, Jack Sharples and Anouk Honoré. Welcome to you all.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hi there.
So we're going to go through what the key signposts are, and then with Mike and Jack, there are six of them, and then Anouk wrote something on the power sector in Europe in 2022 and outlook for 23, so we're going to talk to her later on. But Mike, let me come to you first, if I may. The first of our signposts, perhaps not surprisingly, was gas prices, which obviously moved around violently in 2022. Where are we now with prices? And I guess more importantly, what's the futures curve telling us about 2023? What do you think are the key sensitivities to look out for as well?
Yes, thank you, Jim. Yeah, and obviously, it's pretty well known, everybody's following prices at the moment, that they've come off very sharply since the complete closure of Nord Stream, and prices have been precipitously falling since then as we had a lot more LNG coming in, weakened demand. But even coming into this year, into early January, prices have come off even more. And I think Jack will talk about the weakness of early January demand in Europe as well. So we're now below for TTF, and the Asian spot price is sort of below $20 a million BTU. And sort of the forward curve, when we published the quarterly, we used a forward curve from just over a week ago, and that had prices for 2023 just over $20 a million BTU for both TTF and Asian prices, then slight declines in 2024-25. Prices now actually come slightly below $20 a million BTU. So as the weakness has been felt even more, I think what we're looking at is what we've called in a number of papers and podcasts is this benign outlook for sort of the global gas market. So we've got relatively subdued European gas demand. Obviously, the market expectation is it's probably not going to increase this year. Russia probably continuing to send pipeline gas via Ukraine and obviously by Turkstream, and probably only a modest recovery in LNG demand, especially in the Asian markets. So I think it's this benign outlook which is sort of driving the more subdued level of prices. Of course, you get a sudden cold snap, recovery in industrial gas demand, maybe Putin deciding to cut flows through Ukraine, or China suddenly sort of bouncing back, and that could lead to a very, very different outlook for gas prices this year. That's one of the things we'll be looking at as we do each quarterly to update that, to see how prices are performing against what the start of the year sort of forward curve was.
Okay, well, thanks. You mentioned quite a few sensitivities there, and I guess we're going to go through a few of them now because there are some pretty critical signposts we can look out for. Jack, let me come to you. Mike's already mentioned Russian supply, which obviously was the catalyst for everything that happened last year. So let's talk about that. Where are we now with flows into Europe, and what are we looking out for in 2023?
Well, the flows into Europe are at absolutely historically low levels. I mean, remarkably low levels. The average for January was about 50 million cubic meters per day of Russian gas arriving into the European market, which we define as the EU plus the UK, Switzerland and the non-EU Balkans, so crucially excluding Turkey there. And that 50 million cubic meters per day in January just ended compares to 240-odd million cubic meters per day in January last year, so a really sharp drop. But also the flows in the month just finished were even lower than the sort of 65 to 80 million cubic meters per day that we saw between September and December at the back end of last year, which was obviously since the point at which Nord Stream was closed. Now, in terms of the routes by which that is delivered, there are only two routes now still operational. Into Southeast Europe, flows via Turkish Stream across the border from Turkey into Bulgaria and up through Serbia to Hungary. There we're looking at volumes in January that are pretty stable, about 25 million cubic meters per day, and they look set to remain fairly stable. We've seen more variation in flows via Ukraine, which fell sharply from around 35 million cubic meters per day at the beginning of January to just under 20 million cubic meters per day at the end of the month. So that's a really significant drop. Now, on one day in January, the 23rd, the total Russian pipeline supply to Europe fell below 40 million cubic meters for the first time, hitting 38 million cubic meters per day, which, to put that in context, that's little more than the 32 million cubic meters per day that Europe is getting from Azerbaijan, and putting Russia far below anything we're getting from Norway or from Algeria, let alone anything we're getting in LNG forms. So in terms of looking ahead, the January decline seems to be related to lower nominations under long-term contracts, particularly in relation to the shift in prompt spot prices relative to long-term contract prices that are likely to be indexed to the front month. Looking ahead, we may well see a bit of a rebound in February as those two pricing sets come a little bit back closer into line. But I do not foresee a great rebound really in Russian supply. If we stick to roughly the average that we've had since Nord Stream was closed, as Mike mentioned, that's just under 70 million cubic meters per day. And if that plays out for the rest of this calendar year, we're looking at about 25 BCM of Russian supply. So that's almost a 40 BCM year-on-year decline. So the outlook for Russian gas, not particularly plentiful.
And I guess just in terms of quantifying risk for the year, you've kind of mentioned you're fairly confident about the flows through Turkish Stream, but I guess the flows through Ukraine, which are about half of that 70, I guess they're the ones that you'd see as being at risk, are they?
Absolutely so, yes. In the very near term, for those that are following this, Naftogaz are pursuing commercial arbitration against Gazprom. And if the Russian government takes unkindly to this, the threat has already been made that if the Russian government puts Naftogaz on its sanctions list, that could effectively halt transit. And looking a bit further ahead, of course, the Russia-Ukraine gas transit contract expires on the 31st of December 2024. So even if nothing else, we're going to see the two parties enter into the start of their negotiations over whether that will be extended. And obviously how that goes remains to be seen, given the present geopolitical context.
Okay, great. Mike, let me come back to you then. I mean, we've written quite extensively about the other pipeline flows into Europe. So, you know, Norway is relatively maxed out. North Africa has its issues, has increased flows a little, but there's not much more capacity there. And Jack's mentioned Azerbaijan and, you know, TAP flowing pretty much at capacity. So clearly the flex has been in the global LNG supply area. And you've written a lot about that. So perhaps you could just quickly summarise for us where we are now with LNG supply into Europe, and what you think the critical things to look out for in 2023 are.
Yeah, we saw a big surge of LNG supply into the European market. It's up sort of around about 60% year on year. Some of that, as we've discussed extensively, is diverting volumes away from other markets, especially China, some other Asian markets, and Central South America. A lot of it was also on the back of a fairly robust increase in LNG supply, which was up, according to the data we get from Kepler, about 28 billion cubic metres in 2022. Quite a bit of that was sort of new projects coming on, you know, Sabine Pass, Train 6, Calcasieu Pass, but also you know, recovery in volumes in multiple plants around the world where they suffered from extensive maintenance and technical issues in 2021. So it's a bit of a new supply coming on plus a rebound back. And that was despite the fact that we lost Freeport sort of halfway through the year, which took about 10 billion cubic metres of supply off the market. So Freeport had been on, we'd have had an enormous increase in LNG supply. Looking forward to 2023, we think, you know, that sort of supply, we'll get another supply increase of maybe sort of a similar level, about a 5% rise in supply. Some of that is to do with the sort of ramping up of some terminals to on a full year basis. Obviously, we've got Norway came back on halfway through last year, so a full year from Norway. Calcasieu Pass, a full year from there. Freeport sort of coming back on. The signs are that their asked for permission to feed raw gas into the liquefaction plant at least one train now. So by March, April, we expect that to be pretty much full, almost fully up and running. Also, the Mozambique Coral FLNG came on right at the back end of 2022, so we might get a sort of full year out of that. There aren't really many new trains coming on. The Indonesia Tangguh Train 3 towards the end of the year, possibly Senegal, Mauritania, Tortue, and the very small Congo floating train that Ian and I have got. So we're looking at sort of a similar increase in supply in this year as we did in 2022. So what we're going to look at really each quarter is how the quarterly increase compares, in 2023 Q1 compares to 2022 Q1 as we go through the year. It averages out at about 2.4 BCM a month increase in supply. A lot of it is sort of back-end loaded, so the increases in the early part of the year will tend to be much smaller. We do seem to have got off to a reasonable start in January in terms of certainly global LNG exports, which were higher than the December number. Some of that's not fed through to imports yet, but obviously with some lags, it will feed through. So we'll be looking keenly at the amount of global trade as we go through the year as one of these milestones. Are we underperforming that, which could mean the market will be tighter than we think, or are we at that level or even performing better than that?
And one quick question, which I think is on a number of people's minds, around Russian LNG, which has been surprisingly strong in many people's eyes in 2022. We had planned, at least, Arctic LNG Arctic LNG 2 Train 1 coming on plan for 2023. Are you assuming that's going to appear, or are you assuming it's going to get delayed?
No, I think we've always felt it would be 2024 before it came on, even before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We tend to be all slightly more pessimistic than some of the developers about when these trains might come on. So we always entered 2024, and we think it's probably on track for that. They appear to have all the necessary Western equipment in place for that one, even most of it for trains 2 and train 3, but we're certainly more sceptical about those.
Okay. Well, look, you've mentioned already China. In terms of 2022, there was a dramatic and unexpected decline in LNG imports because of the COVID lockdowns. I guess another thorn in lots of people's minds is the reopening of China and what the impact of that's going to be on the global economy and, from our perspective, on global LNG demand and imports. So what are you thinking about the impact of the Chinese market in 2023?
Yes, I mean, it's it lost sort of over 20 billion cubic meters of LNG demand in China in 2022. I mean, overall gas demand in China was probably down a little bit, but production carried on growing, as did pipe imports from Russia. So LNG was really residual in that sort of equation. We do expect there to be some rebound back this year, but it doesn't seem likely they'll get anywhere near jumping back by the 20 BCM they sort of lost last year. So we're looking at something round about maybe 7, 8 BCM, maybe 10 BCM rise. In other Asian markets, the Southeast Asian markets were quite strong last year, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore. Only Thailand towards the end of the year seemed to react sort of badly to the high spot prices. The other markets didn't. So we still see some growth there. So overall, I think we're probably looking at Asian LNG demand increasing by maybe 10 to 15 billion cubic metres, which is about half the increase in we're expecting global LNG supply. So that does leave, assuming there's no sudden rebound in other areas of the world, which doesn't look likely at the moment, there is some scope there for imports, energy imports into Europe to increase again, to support again this sort of benign outlook. There's another thing we'll be watching through the year is the change in Asian LNG demand on a sort of quarterly basis, and seeing how that's we're expecting something like maybe sort of 1 BCM. A month on average rise through the year. So again, we'll be monitoring that to see how Asian LNG demand's doing, and obviously very closely watching what's happening to China.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Jack, let me come back to you and bring it back to the kind of European focus again. Obviously, one of the things we monitored very closely during 2022 was storage. And I think people have been pleasantly surprised by how much gas was in storage at the start of winter. And of course, we've had quite a warm winter, and so storage has remained at relatively high levels. So could you just bring us up to date on where we are now at the beginning of 2023? And more importantly, I think, what are the key dates and kind of levels you're looking at as we go through the year?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that we started the winter with plentiful storage stocks. And as you say, this ties into Mike's benign scenario that we seem to be currently progressing through. The fourth quarter saw a record low net storage withdrawal, largely helped by very mild winter in October and the first half of November. And then casting forward to the very end of December and beginning of January, we actually saw the remarkable feat of making net storage injections in the middle of winter, which is absolutely unheard of, to be honest, in European gas storage history. And then you get through to January, and the net withdrawal in January of just under 12 BCM is the lowest since 2013. It's about just under 30% lower year on year, and just about half the net withdrawal in January of 2021. So we've been very fortunate in terms of market balance during that period. And as a result, on the 31st of January, Europe had just over 75 BCM in storage, which is slightly higher than the previous record on the 31st of January 2020, when it was just under 75 BCM. But it's also significantly higher than last year, when we had 39 BCM in storage on that particular date. So clearly we are much, you know, we have much more in storage than previously. Now, casting ahead, the European Commission, having successfully met its targets for storage stocks on the 1st of November, on the 23rd of November, published its targets for each member state as to what percentage of their storage capacity should be filled on key dates throughout the coming year, those being the 1st of February, 1st of May, 1st of July, and 1st of September. Now, by aggregating all of those together and figuring out what they are in BCM rather than terawatt hours, you can see that those targets, if you take them as a single whole EU-wide, are somewhere at the bottom of the range of historical storage stocks between 2017 and 2021. So for an example, for the 1st of February, the target is just under 50 BCM, whereas we are obviously somewhere close to 75. So we're well ahead of that target. And if things don't change dramatically during the summer, then it looks like we will continue to be so.
Okay, so let's put it all together then and sort of talk about total supply to Europe, which I guess obviously equates to total demand. What are you thinking about that at the moment? And what are you looking for during the rest of this year?
So the headline numbers for 2022 as a whole, the top-down implied consumption that I calculate on the basis of production, imports and storage movements was down about sort of 13-14% year on year. And I think that aligns very closely with Anouk's bottom-up calculation of European gas demand. By the time you get into December, again, you're looking at somewhere in the range of 14% lower year on year. For January, that dropped to about a 20% decline year on year. And that was very much driven by a seeming dip in demand in the first week of January, and things have recovered since then. And in fact, I would say that if you look at the decline in prompt spot prices from around the 19th of December through to around the 23rd of January, that ties in pretty closely with European sort of implied demand, implied consumption, as I calculated, falling below that of the last couple of years. And by the time we get to late January, it's moving up to being sort of only slightly lower year on year. So taking European sort of total supply, if you like, we seem to have had a real midwinter dip, but we are now moving back towards what you might consider something closer to normal.
And for 23, basically we're expecting sort of demand to be down in line with pretty much the sort of EU 15%.
Yes, I would imagine so. If things don't change dramatically, obviously Anouk has all the key numbers on the demand side, but certainly on the supply side, I would expect that European production would probably be slightly down year on year. We're going to see, obviously, the closure of Groningen is still planned for later this year. As you mentioned earlier, supply by pipeline from Norway and Azerbaijan seems to be fairly robust, and we're factoring in the decline in Russian supply. And then, as Mike suggests, it looks like European LNG imports could be slightly higher year on year. So if you average it all out, then we should be able to to sort of balance the market at present levels of demand, and hopefully, therefore, start the winter of 23-24 with a good amount in storage as well.
Okay, good. As you say, it looks like relatively benign at the moment, but we'll be watching those signposts to make sure we're still on target. Anouk, let me come to you now. In the quarterly, you analysed one of the key sectors for gas demand in Europe, the power sector, and also a sector that surprised many people in 2022 because demand there was much stronger than was expected, given the crisis and high prices. Can you just run us through what the main reasons were for that sort of surprising level of gas demand in the power sector?
Indeed, gas demand in electricity generation went up last year, in contrast to what happened in the industrial sector and in the heating sector. So the gas used for electricity generation increased by about 3%, despite, as you mentioned, the aim to reduce gas consumption, and also despite very high gas prices, which should have pushed gas down the merit order and favored other sources. So the main three drivers were first, continued high electricity demand in the first 8 months of the year, before energy saving measures and before an economic slowdown finally started to have an impact from September onward, and also exceptionally mild temperatures, which we have mentioned already, in the fourth quarter, which contributed to limit the need for electricity demand. The second factor, the most important one, was the low availability of nuclear generation. And thirdly, a continued problem with the level of hydropower, which had started in 2021.
Okay. I mean, I'd like to, if I may, dig into that kind of nuclear question, if I may. Obviously, we've seen a lot of reports from France, from EDF in particular, about the problems they had with the nuclear fleet there. As you're French, you can probably explain in more detail than most others why that occurred. But I mean, talk us through the kind of the nuclear situation in France last year and whether things are better now.
So almost, you're right, almost 70% of the decline in nuclear generation last year originated from France alone. The French utility EDF faced a wave of repair on the pipes affected by stress corrosion, which was first spotted earlier on in 2022. And also there was another factor, which were delays in its scheduled tenure maintenance, and that was due to the COVID pandemic. There were also some strikes in France in October that carry on to delay the maintenance schedule. All of these factors forced a record number of reactors offline for most of the year in France. As a result, the French nuclear generation was down by about 23% in 2022, and therefore that lifted the thermal power generation in France, but also in neighboring markets. Another important factor, actually, was the closure of three reactors in Germany at the end of 2021 as part of the country's phase-out process. Now, this limited the nuclear generation in Germany by about half in 2022 compared to 2021. And that was responsible for around 28% of the total nuclear generation decline in Europe last year. So, in other words, just two countries, France and Germany, were responsible for about 97% of the nuclear decline in Europe in 2022.
That's a pretty hefty decline. What was it that filled that gap? Was it just gas, or was it a combination of all sorts of fuels?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. The sharp fall in both nuclear and hydro generation, actually, was partly covered by lower electricity demand. But also, very importantly, it was covered by higher renewables. And by renewables, here I mean wind and solar, which covered about two-thirds of the gap. Now, of the gap left by the nuclear generation. Electricity from coal and gas made up for the rest, but that was especially coming from coal because the margins favored mostly coal over gas across Europe for most of the year, except maybe for late spring and early summer.
Okay, so we've seen 2022 with a sort of surprising outcome. There have been some significant reasons why that occurred, which you've outlined for us. What are we looking out for in 2023? I mean, what chance are those issues repeating themselves? And if they don't, then are we going to see a rise or a fall in gas demand in the power sector, do you think?
Right. So the main driver to keep an eye on, in my view, in 2023, include, well, the usual suspects, the availability of the nuclear generation, especially the French nuclear generation, the stabilization of hydro stocks, and the scale and speed of additional wind and solar capacity deployment across Europe. So let me give you a brief word about the nuclear generation especially. EDF has managed to restart many reactors, and the company confirmed late December its expectations for about 300 to 300 terawatt hour of nuclear generation in 2023, which would still be relatively low for the French nuclear fleet, but that would be around 19% higher from what we've seen in 2022. However, pinch of salt, still some uncertainties around those numbers. Bear in mind that the company revised its predictions for nuclear generation downwards four times in 2022. Now, in addition, I have to mention that EDF still needs to carry out stress corrosion protection maintenance on six more reactors during 2023. And as a result, the nuclear fleet should fall again when the maintenance program restarts later this month, in February. And RTE, which is the France TSO, the transmission system operator, mentioned possible risks of tightness on the national electricity grid for the second half of February, a time when usually we could see some cold temperatures hitting Europe. And if we do get the cold wave, and if we also have potential low availability of wind, that could mean substantially higher thermal generation, both in France and in neighboring countries around that time. So also on nuclear, moving on to other countries, we saw Belgium close one reactor at the end of January, and Germany is going to close its last three reactors in April. This capacity will not be fully covered by additional capacities that we will see from Finland and Slovakia over the next few weeks, but it shouldn't have too much of an impact on the total electricity supply in Europe. Hydro stocks are showing signs of slow recovery in most with most countries starting 2023 with higher levels than the same period in 2022, which give us reasons to be cautiously optimistic for a slightly better availability of hydro in 2023. Another word on renewables, the continued deployment of renewables should also increase the availability of wind and solar this year. However, the scale and speed of this deployment could be impacted by various factors in 2023, inflation, supply constraints in sourcing some materials, the revenue cap, looming markets reform that could impact this deployment in the years to come. The slow approval processes and supply chain disruptions have been mentioned by generators for the past few months as potential uncertainties. Finally, very logically, the level of electricity demand itself will be important, with the willingness and the ability of consumers being one essential factor. This ability of the consumers to continue to adapt their usual behavior to use less electricity, especially during cold days in the winter, but also during very hot day in the summer, will be very important to balance the system. So as a result, the impact of the temperatures and also of the government measures to shield the consumers should definitely be kept on anyone's radar. So finally, I will conclude. A lot of moving parts, but to answer your question, I think gas demand for electricity generation should go down in 2023 if everything goes to plan, with the return of the French nukes alone potentially covering 5 to 12 BCM compared to last year that could be used in other sectors of gas demand.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Annie. That's a very comprehensive assessment there and gives us plenty to look out for in 2023. We'll certainly be doing that in our quarterly updates and also in our other research. I would encourage you to look for our latest gas quarterly, which came out at the end of January on our website, and also for our research on European gas supply and demand, which will be appearing regularly throughout the year. But for the time being, thank you very much to Anoop. Thanks to Mike and Jack for their contributions. I hope you find this interesting. Please do take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.